Everybody just seems in such a jovial mood this morning.
I'm happy-ish.
Well, you're always happy-ish.
You're a proper English mouse.
I'm an English mouse, and I'm here to tell you.
I was thinking you have the happiness of the simple-minded.
Okay.
I was just thinking that before I said that, I was thinking, I think, you know, we've been podcasting long enough that I could treat you the way I treat Bill now.
Ooh. Hey, I'm right here.
No, but that's, it's an insult and a compliment at the same time. It's saying, you know, we're good enough friends and we've been doing this long enough that there's no reason why I have to be, you know, overly cautious around you.
Yeah, why you have to be nice. And you have to be nice to people.
Realistically, what I've decided in life is being nice is good, but if I can get a joke out of it, that's even better.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrick. Plain, simple, Garrick.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
Here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to Listen to the Prophets. And today, we're going to cancel the apocalypse! No, wait. We're going to... Are you here to drink blood wine or are you here to surf? I can't think of any other apocalypse references.
If the apocalypse comes, beat me!
Oh, yeah. What's that from?
Coffee!
Oh, yeah. Beep me.
Yeah, that's Buffy. Buffy was before cell phones.
Wow, that's right.
How old we are.
Oh, God. Jeez. Yeah. Well, as you heard, that's my other... and we're all up in Klingon gear today. Wait, I gotta put my teeth in.
We are in Klingon cosplay. The whole show will be Klingons. They will sing songs of us tonight.
I'm going to be like the Klingon who's sitting at the bar drunk and just like putting his head on the bar and going to sleep.
Are you the Klingon from Star Trek V? What was his name?
Was it Korg?
Korg, yeah.
Korg. Oh, come on. If anybody should be Korg, it's me. Oh, wait. Well, no. The big guy on the planet, you mean, right?
The one on the planet of Galactic Peace.
Yeah, yeah, I thought Korg was the hot-headed guy that came in with the Bird of Prey and, you know, that had to apologize to...
I apologize.
No, I'm pretty sure... I thought Korg was the guy on the planet. I'm just going to sit there drunk and...
The guy that looked like, you know, like if William Conrad was still alive, he was playing a Klingon.
If William Conrad was a Klingon.
That's what he looked like.
Yeah, no, actually, that's not a bad analogy there.
Yes, he did. So one of you passed out and me and the other one are just headbutting each other and drinking blood wine. Is that what's happening?
Wrong. Or, who was, I'm trying to think of, you know, the three older Klingons from the original series that came back. You know, we had
Kang,
and Koloth.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that. Could be the three of us, but I just who's who?
Ooh, well, you're tall, so you have to be Michael and Sarah.
So you have to be Koloth.
You know what? I would want to be Michael and Sarah if I was going to be one of those three.
Why do I got to be Koloth? Why do I got to be the dandy Klingon?
No, well,
you're English.
You, dude.
If anybody's Koloth, it's you, Andy.
I am so going to butt you in the face and throw you out the airlock in a minute. I'm Koloth.
You get to be the effete Klingon.
I will kill you imagine where you stand.
I always go back to just in trouble with tribbles when he's like, my dear Captain Kirk. It's so not Klingon.
Oh, Liberace is a Klingon.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Anyway,
we are covering today Apocalypse Rising.
Woot, woot, woot. Starts at the 5th season.
Yes, we are in...
We are now on the downside.
I was going to say in decline, but you said downside, so yeah, that, you know, same thing. But of course, as always, before we jump into that, do we have any Star Trek news? I don't think I have any at the moment.
Yeah, we do.
What?
We've cast Black Bolt as Captain Christopher Pike.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah, Andy texted us when it happened. He was so excited.
I thought that was great casting. I thought that, yeah, I can live with this. I think he looks better than Bruce Greenwood.
It's funny. Well, first of all, I thought Bruce Greenwood was actually pretty good in the role, although he didn't look the Jeffrey Hunter.
No, he didn't look anything like him.
But it's funny because, you know, I said it jokingly, but it is reality. He looks the part of Captain Pike pretty well. But I've never heard him say a word. Well, actually, I heard him say one word in...
Was he?
I don't know.
Was he on... he was on that Hell on Wheels?
Okay, isn't that a motorcycle?
No.
I never watched
that. I think you're thinking Sons of Anarchy.
I thought it was akin to that.
No, it was... it was, like, dealing with trains?
Was that the one with Cole Meany?
I think so. Hold on. What's the actor's name again?
Anson
Black Bolt.
Something or other.
Anson Williams?
No,
yes,
not Anson,
it's Anson Williams.
It's the Anson Mount.
Sit on it, Captain Pike.
I just typed Anson Williams.
Anson Mount. He was in Hell on Wheels with Aha. Cole Meany.
Aha. See?
I never watched Hell on Wheels, so it doesn't give me any better understanding of what kind of actor he is. The only thing I know of that I saw him in is The Inhumans, where he said one word in 10 episodes.
Wait,
so I don't know how he delivers a line.
What did you just say? Did you say, humans? Oh, wait, no, that was human. Sorry.
He looks the part, so I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
And, it, you know, when he was playing Black Bolt... Because he can't speak, he has to, you know, pantomime his thoughts.
I almost said enunciate.
And because of that, he would be over-emoting if he was playing a different type of character. But
yeah.
I don't know. Is he going to be like a really ridiculously dramatic actor, or is he going to be, you know, a little bit more subtle when he can actually speak? Mm. I don't know. He looks the part, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see what we get.
I just want them to transfer a couple of them over to Enterprise, and for the rest of the show, we follow Captain Pike's Enterprise. I'd be happy with that.
The only thing is, you know, I think we've definitely tied in with Michael Burnham. And I don't know if we can get away from her at this point. And I also don't know if you could, you can't transfer her to the Enterprise. I just don't think
you
can.
No, because you'd have to explain why her and Spock are together. And it's not going to happen, but it would be nice. He's probably going to be like Tyler Hoechlin in Supergirl. He'll show up for a couple of episodes here and there, and that'll be it.
Yeah, I would say that's
Spock will be on leave or something, or...
Spock is on assignment with Scott.
He's being an Uber driver for Starfleet. But that's right. We had a little. I sent you the text
of nothing.
No, that was the conversation between what was it, Black Bolt and the Watcher. Which was the long pauses of nothing, and then the Watcher just breaking down, going, "Okay, I'll talk." Blah 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 blah. because, you know.
Who's
which
Tate
is kind of
Notaro?
Funny because you guys are covering the what-ups in the Fantastic Cast, and, you know, you were going on the other day about how Verbose the Watcher is in his title, you know. Blah, 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 blah. I can't shut up. But so everywhere else, he's like, I'm not supposed to interfere.
There's another talking to us. So.
Yeah.
There's another casting thing which I'm just looking at now. I had not seen yet. This is
Tig
Notaro board Star Trek Discovery. The actress comedian will guest star on season 2. Tig Notaro. I don't even know who she is. Former Mississippi star will guest star in the sophomore season of the drama, taking on the role of chief engineer Denise Reno of the USS Hiawatha. In typical Star Trek Discovery fashion, the series does not reveal the number of episodes each actor is slated to appear in. Production on season 2 begins this month. A return date has not yet been determined. The USS Hiawatha was briefly mentioned in the Star Trek video game Starfleet Command as an Acula class ship affiliated with the Federation Starship Starfleet, excuse me. Notaro joins a season 2 cast that includes Anson Mount as Captain Pike, aka Captain Kirk's predecessor on the USS Enterprise.
She looks like if she was taller, she could play Janet Reno.
I'd really like Jason Isaacs to be back this season.
Oh, he'll be back.
I don't know if he'll be back this year. I think he'll be back at some point. I don't know if he's going to be back this year or not.
It happen.
I hope he is. I think he adds a lot to the show. I think his character, even though we haven't met his regular universe character, I get the feeling he's pretty much the same as the mirror universe guy.
Well, I don't know. I have not progressed any further than the last time we talked in my audiobook for that with Lorca on I can't remember where he's at.
Where he be at, you mean?
Ah, with the Kodos, the executioner,
and Kang.
Kang, no, not Kodos, not that Kodos, and Kang. Tarsus IV, yeah, the book, yeah. Well, that's because work kind of pushed it out of the way. So, but we got any? I missed the latest space baseball update. You guys got anything? Or maybe I'll look at that for the next episode.
So yeah, let's save space baseball for the next episode.
Space baseball. Because it's a new season, but like Paul and I said, you know, it's always spring somewhere, so actually space baseball could be played year-round. In space, no one can hear you spring.
Space, nobody can hear you strike out.
Yeah. One, two, three, you're up! Another Warner Brothers cartoon reference. So, we're going to jump into the episode then?
Sure. Apocalypse Rising.
Deep in the heart of Klingon territory.
This is a great day for the Empire.
A raging war with the Federation has begun.
Klingons are throwing everything they have at us.
Now, to defeat the enemy.
Who are they sending?
Me.
Sisko must become the enemy.
Haven't you ever seen a Klingon before?
In a suicide mission behind enemy lines. On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
First episode of season 5.
The one.
Very excited about season 5.
Party time. Excellent. Original air date. September 30th, 1996. Let's see. 1996. I think I've been married for 2 years at that point.
That's same here, and I was about 2 weeks from becoming a dad.
I think I was... of course, if I can remember my kids' birthdays...
No, I was not 2 weeks from being a dad. I was 2 years from being a dad.
Oh.
Not 96, 98. September 96, I had just purchased the home I live in now.
Well, I was either a month away from being a dad or a month and a year away from being a dad. I don't remember. How terrible I am.
Well, it's more typical for you not to remember your children's birth dates than it is for me.
This is true. It's what I do. Or what I don't do. Or what I don't remember. But This episode was directed by James L. Conway, written by Ira Steven Burr, Robert Hewitt Wolf, and our guest stars were Mark Alamo, woohoo, as Gul Dukat, Robert I Never Blink O'Reilly as Gowron, J.G. Hertzler, right? That's it? Yeah, Hertzler as Murtok, and Casey Biggs as Damar. So, the plot goes like this. Having learned from Odo that a changeling has taken Gowron's form and is now in control of the Klingon Empire, Sisko is ordered by Starfleet Command to expose the imposter. He, Odo, who is now a raging alcoholic, O'Brien, and Worf must get close enough to the false Gowron to expose him as a changeling, and must pose as Klingons to do so. Julian Bashir, who is having a not-so-subtle, although now that we know real-world things at the time, conversation with Kira. Did you guys pick up on that during the show?
No, not in any way. No, it wasn't unsubtle.
Well, I mean, I didn't know the first time I watched it that that was his baby. But while watching it this time, I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Anyway, Julian Bashir is called upon to surgically alter them to that end. Even Worf is altered so that his cranial ridges are different. Yeah. To keep him from being recognized. Oh, I would have never known that was Worf. Come on. Sisko is also given 4 metal spheres, which, when activated, will emit radiation, which will force any nearby changeling to revert to its natural gelatinous state. Ah, there's always room for Jell-O. Sisko calls upon Gul Dukat, who had previously captured a Klingon bird of prey, which Sisko hopes can get them to Tai Gokar, the heavily guarded headquarters of the Klingon military, undetected. On board the bird of prey, Worf trains the humans to behave like Klingons. Yeah, that goes well. While Dukat creates Klingon identities for each of the 4, adding them to the list of candidates that will receive the Order of the Batholith, which is awarded by Gowron himself. Arriving at Tygokor, Dukat transports them to the surface and leaves them to fend for themselves. See you, bye! Dukat, out! As they will be able to leave Klingon space freely if they succeed and the war ends, or they will be executed as spies if they fail. End of story. The 4 arrive at the Hall of Warriors. Meanwhile, the Hall of Warriors, where the ceremony has already begun, and try to blend in as best they can. They take anti-intoxicants, wimps, in advance to survive a night of drinking Klingon blood wine. Soon, which tastes great, but has no bubbles. Soon, General Martok, second in command to Gowron, arrives, indicating that Gowron will arrive soon. The 4 scramble to set up their emitters in a Benny Hill-like fashion, not without some difficulty. O'Brien then encounters a problem. Martok seems to recognize him, though. Yeah, he recognizes O'Brien. Just let that sink in. Yeah, O'Brien, he recognizes. That's though he is able to convince Martok that they fought in a battle together. The 4 finally set up the emitters, and Sisko is called to receive his award.
Ah, winning the Academy Award for Most Overacted Klingon.
Oh, I'm sorry. He attempts to activate the emitters, which, by my account, he should have done before he freaking walked up there, but is knocked to the floor by Martok, who has finally recognized them and has them thrown in a security cell. Once they are done, Martok confides to Sisko that he too believes that Gowron is an imposter. He says that Gowron ordered that the emitters be destroyed, wink, wink, but still agrees to help, saying that the only way to expose Gowron is to kill him where he stands. Martok then releases Sisko and his group and leads them back to the Hall of Warriors, but keeps Odo outside, saying he does not trust him. Worf proceeds to attack Gowron, who insists on fighting him one-on-one, just as a real Klingon would. Martok wonders why Sisko does not shoot Gowron outright. Odo then points out something. Oh, hey. Gowron called off his bodyguards and chose to stand to fight Worf in singular combat, thus showing Klingon honor. Changelings, on the other hand, do not care for honor. Martok insisted that there would be no honorable combat, which is very uncharacteristic of a Klingon. Odo concludes that the changeling is not Gowron, but Martok! Just when Worf is about to kill Gowron, Odo reveals the false Martok to the crowd. No, the stupid false Martok reveals himself, but we'll get into that. And the Klingons open fire, quickly destroying the changeling. Gowron then realizes that Odo had been falsely led to believe that Gowron was the changeling, which would have led to Gowron's assassination by the Federation, thus allowing the fake Martok and the Founders to gain control of the Empire. Gowron also expresses his doubt that the war will end because Klingons do not simply turn from battle, but he does agree to a ceasefire, and Sisko and his men are returned safely back to DS9, and Gowron gives Worf an insult too on the way out. The end.
Yeah, you with the little eyes.
You have shut that big eyes like me. Like a real Klingon.
Drink blood wine with me now.
And I swear, I don't know how that guy can keep his eyes open for so long. Because I held mine open and watched every time he was on screen. I'm like, this guy never blinks. How does he do it?
It's a very scary Klingon, his Gowron. First episode of season 5. If we have a look at the episode lists for what's coming up, possibly one of the best years in terms of them all being distinctly memorable. One of the things I thought when watching this was how good it was, how fast paced it was, how it got to the point, got in, told its story, and got the hell out of Dodge. Originally, it was planned to be a two-part opener to the season. Ooh. Which they ultimately decided against for A, cost reasons, but also because for Sweeps Week, they wanted the Tribbles episode to celebrate Star Trek's 30th birthday. And according to the companion, for a long time, it was thought that the Tribbles episode would be the first episode of the season. And then when they decided to move the Tribbles episode back to November for Sweeps rather than having it in September, near the actual 30th anniversary, they had to re-break the first 5 or 6 episodes of the season, which meant this episode got cut down to 1, which I think benefited it amazingly. I think this would have been a bit of a drag as a two-parter.
Yeah, I think you're right.
As a 45-minute opener for season 5, I thought this was really good. I really enjoyed this episode. I loved all the character bits. I loved that Odo's turned into a raging alcoholic now that he can actually taste alcohol. I thought a lot of the story beats were very interesting. I love the idea of them going undercover as Klingons, which just amused me. I loved how quickly Avery Brooks settled into being a Klingon. It seems like he would enjoy being a Klingon. I liked everything about this one. I thought it was a really solid opener, well written. Odo's a bit shit at the undercover stuff, which is a surprise. Because, you know, when he's planting his part of the funny ball thing that he's supposed to expose him, he's like, could he be any more obvious? Well, everyone else is like subtly planting it where they should be. And he's standing there with his arm up, trying to position his big ball in between that statue's arm.
But you got to look at it this way. All right, he's just become human recently.
Doesn't mean he'd be a shit detective, though. That's his job.
He should be used to assuming a form and then acting inconspicuous form.
No, because he's... Look at him like a teenager. He's getting used to it. Like he's going through puberty. He's getting used to... This is his body now. Before, you got to think inside, he has a different structure. You know, he's all now he's locked into this form that, I mean, you know, because even though we saw that on the outside, he's always looked the same. We don't know what the inside, you know, his, we have to assume it's a, you know, just like I don't know, like a rubbery substance when he's in a solid form. You know, like if you cut him, does he not bleed? You know what I'm saying? I think he's just not used to his body yet, which is why he's so. And I think that's maybe what Renee was trying to convey in that, is that he's not only confident in himself. You know, he's not confident in himself. I don't think he's got his moves down yet because of the new body being locked into it. I don't know if that, you know, I didn't see anything stating that was how he was trying to play it, but I think that comes across that way.
It's certainly a valid door prize explanation.
Plus, he's probably hungover.
it still looked a bit silly.
See, I'm going to change the subject a little bit, because I think Bill makes a good argument there, and I'm going to take that as a rare one-time thing and let it go. But I keep thinking about your comment, Andy, about, you know, being happy that they did it in one instead of two. And see, as a general rule, I like when they do episodes in two if they can kind of make it a little bit more epic in the way that they do it. My fear in this one is if they tried to do it in two, it would be reunification.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of got it's got some parallels to that episode, and I'm afraid it would just be almost the same if they had done it. So, I would have liked for it to be two episodes, but only if the writing staff could have sat down and come up with a real clever way to do it so that we were getting, you know, where no man has gone before in some way, as opposed to where people have been in previous episodes of TNG.
I mean, because really, all right, so if they were to make this two, where would you cut it? Where would you split it? Would you cut it when Gul Dukat says, all right, you're on your own? You know, would that be a cut point? And then could you stretch them out for a whole another 45 minutes? You know, mingling at a Klingon
party? I'm thinking that they would have something where they infiltrate the Klingons, and then, you know, you'd end it on a cliffhanger with, you know, Gowron walking into the room or something, which is, you know, similar to, again, reunification, you know, where they ended it with Spock walking into the room. It just feels like it would be too similar to that. And that's probably a lack of creative writing on my own part. So if the writing staff they had could have come up with something that was new and different, I would have liked that.
Right. In The Companion, Iris Stephen Burr says that most of part one was broken to be on Dukat's ship when he takes them to Tyde Kor. So that sequence would have been much longer than it was in the actual episode. And they would have ended part one then with them getting to the Great Hall, and then part two would have been them on Kronos or whatever it's called.
Tycho Kor?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
So most of the second half of episode one then would have been with Dukat and Tyde Kor. On the ship, sorry.
Mm. Yeah, I'm glad this was one episode.
It did quick. Turn out for the best that they did it that way. I agree with you guys. Excuse me, my dog just makes me crazy. But like I said, my natural instinct would be, ooh, do two because it's more epic. I just don't know if they could have made it more epic.
No, I think you're right. I think part two would have been just stomping around sets.
Yeah. And that is one of the problems with two-part episodes in Star Trek in general. You know, you do see that often where the first episode, they're building up to get you to that cliffhanger, and then the second episode just kind of resolves it. You know, like the second episode is sometimes a letdown. Because they have padded it to the point where they're trying to get a full episode when they, you know, they could have done the whole thing in one. So it probably was a good decision, but my instinct would have been to go the other way.
They don't think that they lost too much by making it one. It would have meant that they could amortize the cost of all of the makeup across two episodes instead of it being the budget for one. But other than that, I mean, one of the things that it does say in here as well, the Tribbles episode was very much on their mind, and that influenced the writing of this one, whereas it was decided that they couldn't just put them in makeup. They would have to alter them on some kind of DNA level that if they were scanned, they would pass rather than just, oh, because, you know, like in Tribbles, Arvin says, oh, look, this man is whatever, just because he scans him. So there's all of those changes that they said happened as well. I think that's a little bit of overthinking, to be honest with you. I don't think they really need any of that.
Well, I go back to, I can't think of the name of the episode of the original series, when Kirk, you know,
became a Romulan.
Becomes a Romulan.
The Enterprise incident.
And all they did was, like, raise his eyebrows a little bit. And Scotty walks in and he can only barely recognize him. It's like, really?
Yeah.
How stupid are you?
At least here, they are barely recognizable.
Yes.
I think Sisko's the most recognizable.
Really? I thought Renee...
Did you think that? I thought Renee wasn't at all, because you were seeing essentially the bottom half of his real face.
Well, yeah, completely covered.
So I thought, and Cole Meany just looks... his face just looks so much fatter as a Klingon.
Yes.
So he doesn't look recognisable at all.
He looks like Klingon from the Planet of Galactic Peace.
He does.
Well, that was my point, that like all the people that Martok is supposedly going to recognize, it's O'Brien.
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's the least recognizable.
Yeah, well, I mean, because how much interaction would Martok have with O'Brien?
Nothing.
Martok and him go hang out on the holodeck all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he should have recognized Sisko or Worf. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody else on DS9 should be below his, his radar.
But the thing is, I don't even think they shared a scene, because Martok was in the same room as with Sisko earlier last season, I believe. And then, of course, he knows Worf.
But you're forgetting something, Bill. You're forgetting something. This isn't really Martok.
This is true too, but so again, why would the changeling know Chief O'Brien?
Maybe the changeling studied DS9
to take over, you know, Chief O'Brien. Maybe,
but still,
or maybe when he was in the Great Link, he got more information about DS9. But just because they have more information about DS9,
because there's no way this guy's been infiltrating the
for how long? We don't know.
Well, yeah, but he's obviously been there for a while, and Odo was just turned into a human recently.
That has nothing to do with O'Brien.
Well, you know what? They did have extensive files on them, because wasn't he in that whole simulation thing when they were on that one planet?
Yes.
Was it okay. So, you know, maybe.
No prizing it away, baby.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you know prize? Why didn't Sisko just push that button before he did? He really have to go get that award? He had the thing out in his hand. He should have pressed it.
Because he's stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I that was one of the things. I did think he should have just pressed that button there and then. He shouldn't have gone up and got his award. He should have just pressed the button and be done with it. We will find out in Purgatory Shadow later on how long Martok has been a prisoner. So maybe hold on to that thought until we get there and see if the timelines all work up, because I don't know if they do. But yeah, I just hand-waved it away as, well, he's not the real Martok, so, you know, doesn't really matter. All of the actors had different reactions to the makeup. Michael Dorn thought it was hysterical that they all had to wear it. Avery Brooks loved it, apparently. René Auberjonois thought it was a day at the beach, because it was only half the makeup job he normally has.
Yeah.
And Cole Meany couldn't shut up moaning about it.
The mopey Klingon.
Yes. So
yeah, we all just can't wear a little uniform like you.
Yes. Did you not think it was strange that Jadzia didn't go on this? Would she not have been the most logical person to take with them?
Yeah, because they did have women, female Klingons in there. So.
And she had the most exposure to the Klingon, other than Worf. Actually, she probably had more exposure to Klingon customs than Worf did.
Yeah, so she...
Well, I would say, you know, maybe, you know, they wanted to leave a senior officer behind, but, you know, when do they ever do that any other time? So
isn't that Kira's job?
Well, yeah. Who's, you know, having right. O'Brien's baby.
Yes, the real reason was she was allergic to the makeup. So she couldn't go along. So the real world reason was Terry Farrell couldn't wear that makeup.
They could have even worked that into the story if they wanted to.
Yeah.
They could have had her tried to, you know, cling on her up, and for some reason they were unable to because of her
trills are genetically compatible. Yeah.
I'm allergic to Klingon Ox 5.
So a line explaining that would have been nice, but there was a real world reason. They weren't just snubbing Dax in this particular one.
Now, how did they figure that out? Did they start to put it on and she's like,
no, apparently that's the reason that the Trill makeup has changed from the first one that you saw, which was in Next Gen, to here. The reason that it's changed was Terry Farrell was allergic to the makeup job.
How much different is it? I don't really remember it being super different. I mean, it's just the spots, isn't it?
I think there was some latex involved in the original one. I don't remember without looking it up. So basically they refined it to just be the spots because Terry Farrell can cope with that. It's the latex that she was allergic to.
Well, let me cross that off my list. Terry Farrell and latex. I have to send that to Adam Nimoy.
Well, it may be if it's stuck to her skin more than anything else, but I like that there was a real world reason for her not to be there, because she did make the most sense, in all honesty, but arguably more than O'Brien.
Right. Did it just hit me?
And then he wouldn't have had to moan about it. I really did love the scene, the tongue-in-cheek scene between Bashir and Kira.
Yes, that was good.
When she actually echoes
your fault.
Your fault.
My fault.
Yeah, and it's the most playful we've seen Alexander Siddig be on the show, and he's very natural and funny and comedic as opposed to being a bit stiff and boring. So that was pleasant. I like that they've basically, she's pregnant now, so she has to stay behind. And I think there's an idea there that they would have to keep her under constant surveillance, wouldn't they? Medical surveillance.
Kira would have made a feisty little Klingon, wouldn't she?
Well, again, she would have been another one to take with them, but obviously, again, the real world got in the way. That real world.
Stupid.
I hate the real world. I hate adulting.
Stupid.
What did you think of what did you think of the set for the Hall of Warriors? You know, they used some camera trickery. They did some flipping the picture and then editing it to make it, because they only had like 50 people, but they made it look like 100.
It just looked like the Klingon Hall from Sins of the Father, but with more smoke. I mean, one of the areas that green screen has really helped is in the area of making sets look better and bigger and more expansive. The CG and green screen. Deep Space Nine didn't have any of that, so essentially it just looks claustrophobic. You know, you would imagine that this big Klingon ceremony would be in an auditorium, like a gladiatorial arena kind of deal, with thousands of Klingons chanting as people get their awards and big barbarian fights going on. And this is, again, they just stood in a room with lots of dry ice going off. And it didn't detract from this particular one, because this episode had a good story with good dialogue and good characters. So I'll give a pass to sets and shit when I'm engrossed in the character drama. But if we're just looking purely at it from a set thing, I think that's where Deep Space Nine sometimes suffered. It didn't have the budget to do that kind of thing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I do like it when they get off the station and go on location.
I picture the Klingon culture sometimes, or not so much the Klingon culture. I think if you watch Game of Thrones, I feel like the Dothraki are taken from Klingons.
Yes, I agree entirely. They would be Klingons.
And I picture, like, if Star Trek was a little bit more graphic, which I'm not asking that they would be, but in my mental canon, I picture a Klingon celebration as being similar to the Dothraki wedding, where people are fighting and killing each other at the wedding, and they're like, oh, if you don't have at least, you know, 3 deaths at the wedding, it's considered to be a failure, you know, that kind of thing. And that's kind of what I picture a Klingon ceremony. I just picture it being less orderly and more, you know, more rowdy.
I agree entirely. One of my favourite bits about this episode was the twist that it wasn't Gowron who was the changeling.
Yes.
It was actually Martok. That came about again as a last at the last minute. It
wait,
was Ron.
Wait, let me re-say that. Yes.
Yes.
You have to say it like Gowron. Yes.
Apparently, Ron Moore went to Iris Stephen Burr after they broke the story and said, "Do you not think it would be a better twist if it was Martok rather than Gowron? Because they were going to kill Gowron." Mm. And Ron Moore said, "We lose something by killing Gowron." And then they got to bring Martok back anyway. So it all worked out for the best. So that was a last-minute change that they made that actually not only benefited this episode, because it turns out that the big cliffhanger of last time was planted by the changelings to make Odo think it was Gowron when really it was Martok, which makes them even more clever and sneaky than you thought they were. But also the knock-on effect for the show was they got to keep Martok around as well, despite killing him off in this episode. So it worked doubly well. So again, last minute change that they didn't plan ended up working out dividends for the show.
So you could say they had their Klingon and ate him too.
Ba-dum-cha.
Ew.
It's, you know, just on another tangent, you know, we get our synopsises from the Wikipedia page. And if you click on the Robert O'Reilly link on the Wikipedia page, I have no idea when this photo of him is taken, but he looks like so not Gowron.
Have you never seen him in other things?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that I remember.
He's one of those guys. He's quite slight and blonde in real life. He's been a villain in everything. If you watch TV in the 80s, you saw Robert O'Reilly. I'm sure he was in the A-Team. I know he was in lots of Stephen J. Cannell stuff. But he was in Knight Rider. He was in a Knight Rider rerun I watched the other day. And he is quite a slight guy. His biggest feature is those massive eyes. So when they make him a Klingon and build him up, it really does make him look a lot bigger because of his expressive face. But you wouldn't recognize him as being a Klingon in other shows. He's quite slight with blonde hair and doesn't look like this at all.
Well, in the picture on Wikipedia, he's quite balding.
It's not a very flattering
photo. He looks a little bit pudgy, actually. It looks because he's wearing a lanyard, so I'm thinking it was taken at some sort of convention or something.
Well, Knight Rider was 25 years ago, wasn't it?
And this show was 22 years ago.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like this is recent. And, no. And the photo may well be. But it just, you know, it's just an observation. He just doesn't look like Gowron to me at all.
That probably helps him not be typecast, though, doesn't it?
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Then you can make appearances on other shows. On the other hand, it says he's retired from acting, so he can be as typecast as they want.
Well, again, like you said, this is 25 years ago. If he was 35 here, pushing 40, he's well past retirement age, isn't he?
It says he's 68.
Right, so he's earned his retirement.
Yeah,
this episode was nominated for two Primetime Emmy Awards for Outstanding Makeup and Outstanding Cinematography for a multi-camera series, by the way.
You're very good.
And this, you know, they did some good stuff here.
But what did Blaine think?
Blaine says, party time. What'd he say about the Klingons?
Blaine says, "Hi guys. It feels good to get back to DS9 after watching a season of Enterprise and two of Voyager. I love these characters."
Did you stay awake for the two seasons of Voyager?
Cleanse your palate.
Worf and Kira have a great argument about going to save Sisko and Dax. I love that Worf's reaction to a suicide mission is that he's looking forward to the songs that will be sung about them. Kira's opportunity to screw with Dukat's head about the father of the baby is another fun moment.
Yeah,
of course, from there, it becomes a Klingon episode, mostly in a single set of open walls with plain red backgrounds, which makes the sets and production feel cheap, which kind of goes to what you were saying about them saving money for the upcoming episode. It's almost as though they chose to spend money on the makeup first and then used what they had left to build the set. Still, settling the Klingon War to focus on matters more fundamental to DS9 and less reminiscent of TNG is a good thing. Until the next episode, glory to you and your house, Blaine.
And to you, Blaine.
Kapla.
So, yeah, I mean, I, once again, as is our norm, kind of agree with Blaine.
I thought the sets were okay. They didn't detract completely from...
No, because like I said, that's not what you're focusing on. Because the story's so tight in this one and so well written, and the performances are so good that you're watching that.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. But it's, you know, the sets were somewhat sparse, but that's okay. It's, you know, I think the story matched what they needed for the sets.
Mm.
So I didn't find it to be distracting, but I do agree that it kind of was what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, anyways. I mean, they can't have the Discovery budgets to where, you know, they'd make... Yeah, it would be a big giant hall, and, you know, you'd have all the houses gathered to probably... You know, people gathered by house, and inter-household battles, and drinking, and...
Party time!
Anti-intoxicant. What a bunch of whips.
Well, it's better than them drinking Synthahol.
Yeah. And they do have to have the wits about them.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. They only have to have one too many and let it slip what they're doing, and, you know.
We're here to kill Gowron.
Yeah, they've got a battle.
I got this two little spheres. Oh, yeah, let me put them together. Whoops, I scanned you. Whoops, I scanned you again. Oh, you're dead. Sorry.
Odo was practically a drunken fool anyway.
Oh, the bubbles are so soothing. Oh, glug, 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 glug.
Oh God, yeah, his little rant about the tiny bubbles
turned into Don
in
Hope.
The wine, make me feel happy, make me feel fine. Odo breaks out in the Don Hope. I wanted to see, like, maybe, like, next episode, Odo's put on like 10 pounds, you know, and he's he's like shoving chicken wings in his mouth. More, or, you know, quark, more chicken wings.
Well, you figure that would be a real risk for him because he has no concept of what he should and should not eat.
You know, someone who's never had a sense of taste is introduced to chocolate and chicken wings.
And Diet Mountain Dew.
And so by episode 5, they're rolling him around the station.
You know, he looks like the Klingon from the, you know, Planet of Peace. And now playing the part of Odo, William Conrad.
All right, you want to rate this?
Yeah.
Yes, I will rate this with, See, I want to get a half in there so I can do a joke about half of a Polaron sphere, but, I don't know if it's, I'm gonna go with four spheres, just like they had, four spheres for this. I don't know. I mean, I want to go to 4.5, but I mean, it's just not that good. It's good, but it's not that good for me. I'll say four spheres.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Bill. It's a good episode. It's solid. It's very enjoyable, but it's not like among the absolute elite. You know, so it's not a 4.5 or a 5. But that is not to say it wasn't entertaining, because it was. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't, you know, the nature of our show is we nitpick on little things. So, but when you think about it, most of the things that we did have were kind of nitpicks. There wasn't a lot in here that you'd say, oh, that was bad in any way, shape, or form. So,
but that was just solid... give us something to talk about,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's
this is good. That was funny. That was great.
That's the nature of our show. You know, we have to take it apart and look to see what little things jump out at us. So... You know, like I said, there's very little negative about it. It's just that it doesn't reach that, you know, upper echelon where it really makes you think, you know, which I think those are the best episodes where it really gets you thinking at the end. And, you know, this is something that, you know, is unanswerable and you could just sit there and debate it forever. Those are my absolute favorite. So this doesn't quite reach that level, but I think a 4 is an extremely good grade, and I think that's what it gets.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4 as well, but I'd probably give it 4 and a quarter, 4.5, but I know what's coming up. so I'm not going to go that high. I think this is everything that the finale wasn't, whereas I thought the finale was just set up with no actual meat to it. This had a lot going on, as well as rounding out plot lines, as well as setting up stuff for the future. I thought this was a great season premiere that did benefit immensely for me by only being the one episode. So, 4.
All right, so that brings us to... This is the end. The question I have is, do we want... We have one piece of email in our box. Do we want to read it or save it for next time?
Do it for the next one.
All right, so then we got anything else before we sign off?
No, that's it.
I was curious as to what Dukat would have looked like as a Klingon. And then I was thinking, was he ever... I know he played a different Cardassian in another episode of TNG, but I don't know if Dukat... no, I'm blanking on the actor's name. Mark, if Mr. Alamo had ever played a Klingon on the series.
I don't think he has.
No, he was a Romulan in Next Gen.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think he was ever a Klingon.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see that, but that kind of added a... Well, it didn't really add anything to his character, just reaffirmed his existing character. You know, don't get chummy with him. Dukat's a dick. Remember that.
Yeah. The scene with Dukat was great, and I could see why if he'd expanded this to 2, that would have been a lot of fun. Mm. But I think we got just enough of him and Damar being snarky.
Damar, God, he's like the emo... If you could get an emo Cardassian, there you are. Jeez, man, with his comments all the time. Blah, 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 blah. Shut up. It's like a teenager back there.
I like the character of Damar, just because he's...
Damar.
Stupid. I just like him because he's different from the other Klingons. He stands out, and not Klingons, Cardassians. He stands out in some way, and I like that. He's not just, you know, just not just more of the same.
Mm.
All right, so that's it for Apocalypse Rising. What are we doing next time?
Next time, our all new episode of Listen to the Prophets. It's the show's 100th episode.
Woohoo.
An enemy vessel.
A warship. A Jem'Hadar warship.
Falls into Sisko's hands.
No survivors.
To get it back, the Jem'Hadar are willing to kill for it.
This is our ship.
Was your ship. Now it's mine.
But to uncover its secret.
The Fulda doesn't want the ship.
She wants something aboard. Is Sisko willing to die for it?
We have you completely surrounded.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
You know, we are rapidly approaching our 100th episode.
Ooh.
I think...
If there's been 100 episodes of the show, why have there not been 100 episodes?
Because we did a couple of the episodes as one, but then we had
extra episodes.
We did have extras. I believe I could be wrong, but I think the ship will be our 99th episode.
All right.
Hmm. So we'll celebrate, you know, soon. Love the big party.
Good.
Alright, but in the meanwhile, bye everybody.
See you later.
Kapla! What's wrong with you guys? Kapla! It's a Klingon episode.
Yeah. Kapla!
Kapla. I didn't get a kapla out of you.
Kapla!
Alright.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okie doke.
I give 2 minutes to you and your valiant crew.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.